Our guest today is Scott Barry Kaufman, PhD. Scott is a cognitive scientist and humanistic psychologist exploring the depths of human potential. He is a professor at Columbia University and director of the Center for Human Potential. Dr. Kaufman has authored 10 books and is host of the Psychology Podcast, which has received over 20 million downloads. In 2015, Business Insider named Dr. Kaufman one of 50 groundbreaking scientists who are changing the way we see the world. Well, welcome, Scott. I'm so thrilled to have you on the podcast today as one of our inaugural speakers in the inaugural season. Where are we hearing from you today? Where are you based out of?
Thanks, Jennifer. It's so great to, it's such an honor to be here for your inaugural episode. I'm in Santa Monica, California right now.
Very lovely.
Right near the beach.
Yeah. You're on the beach. Okay, but you took a break to come chat with me about introverts today, right? Off the beach.
Yeah, well, I wish I could just lounge on the beach every day, but I took a break from work.
Yeah. Well, it's nice. But right when we started, I heard the leaf blowers next door start. So timing isn't always great, but hopefully we'll be able to work through that. I'm so pleased that you're here because, you know, I've been diving into your work. And the nice thing is there's a variety of things that, as I've said in the intro, that you've done. And I think 9 books, as I mentioned, but also your videos were really what captivated me, as well as your podcast, because I guess I'm kind of auditory and visual. I like to kind of see the person. So I feel like we already know each other, even though you don't know me. We do have some colleagues in common, such as Susan Cain and Adam Grant, and I think Dan Pink, who all I started reading more about all of you together in the mix. How did you connect with that super duper team?
Yeah, we should all form a band.
Well, yeah, I can clap.
Boy, I don't know. I've known Susan a long time. We go back to the days we were blogging at Psychology Today in like 2008 and 2009. So I knew Susan before her book Quiet came out, you know. Uh-huh. And
very cool. Yeah. And it's neat to be able to see the evolution of all of those folks I mentioned and many more who have, you know, learned a lot. And so I guess I want to start, you know, with a question around, you know, you challenge assumptions a lot. You know, you've written about intelligence, you've spoken about management hierarchies such as Maslow's hierarchy, and you kind of explode some of those myths. You don't throw it all out, but you build on that. You know, in terms of introversion, you've also written and spoken about that. So what beliefs have you challenged there? You want to talk a little bit about maybe the SBK, as you call yourself, or Scott's version of where you see introversion and how you view it at this point?
Yeah, I take a scientific perspective. There are different ways people differ in their personality. There's the big five. You know, the introversion, extroversion dimension, the agreeableness, disagreeableness dimension, the conscientious versus lazy, we'll call it lazy dimension, the agreeableness,
Yeah, you said agreeableness, that's okay. But a lot of people are not familiar with Big Five, so I'm glad you're kind of reviewing that, you know, so yeah.
Thank you. Neurotic versus neuroticism versus emotionally stable, and open to experiences versus closed-minded. So those are 5 main dimensions of personality. The way I view the extroversion introversion one is really, do you have a preference for quiet, you know, versus do you need lots of stimulation and do you get a lot of rewards? You know, often, you know, there are things called appetitive rewards. That's the technical term for them. Appetitive rewards, things like
competitive,
appetitive things. Okay. Things we evolved to be intrinsically rewarding, like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Mm-hmm. You know, and you do tend to find that extroverts are more motivated. They have intrinsic rewards for novel social interactions, for novel sexual partners, for drugs, for, you know, they're more impulsive, they're more likely to die in car accidents. So there, the, you know, this dimension of dopamine really is, differentiates extroverts from introverts and the kind of reward structure that you have from that dopamine.
Well, you had me at car accidents. I'm sure you probably could cite some research on that, but
there is research
on that, huh? How do they determine?
More into risky sex, more
risky.
Into
okay. Yeah.
Riskiness. Yeah.
Interesting. Because, you know, the typical way many of us came up was through Myers-Briggs and Carl. That's how I was introduced to introversion, extroversion, where I sort of had an aha experience about living with my husband, who I couldn't figure out, you know, as a young bride who, you know, had someone who would always go into his little man cave afterwards and wouldn't come out for a few hours. So your point about quiet, but you know, the framework that I and many others, counselors or psychologists use was around based on Carl Jung's, theory. But it sounds like you don't come from that dimension, or how do you look at Carl Jung in the mix of this Big Five and their theoretical basis of introversion?
Yeah, great question. First of all, I'm a big Carl Jung fan. I really love. I used a lot of his work on intuition in my dissertation, where I looked at the difference in an intuitive style, cognitive style versus an analytical cognitive style. Something I was super interested in. So I'm really interested in that aspect of his work. But modern day science suggests that he was partly wrong in that he conflated openness to experience with introversion. He tended to say like introverted people are more imaginative, and that's not necessarily true. That's a different dimension. That's openness to experience. So I think that there's a tendency to lump lots of things under the umbrella of introversion that really are not the same thing as introversion. You know, you'll say things like introverts are more creative. They're more imaginative. They're better people. It's like they put everything good in the world under the label introversion to make introverts feel better about themselves. But that's not really, you know, introversion is just one temperamental aspect of being human. It's not, I think we put too much under that umbrella. But it is a preference for quiet. It's a preference for low environmental stimulation, you know, like loud noises and all this stuff. And there does tend to be a greater, thoughtfulness. So this is true. This is true. There tends to be those who score higher in introversion tend to deliberate more before they make a decision. Like we already talked about risk taking and how extroverts, well, the flip side of that is that introverts tend to, you know, like to think things through a little bit more before they jump into it. But, you know, I think Carl Jung folded in what we would call openness to experience and imagination today into his conceptualization of introversion. And I think that modern science doesn't quite bear that out.
Yes, yes. Well, what I like about the way you work, you seem to not throw out the baby with the bathwater. You take what you like from these different theories. I was thinking about, as you were saying, sort of the nuanced view of introversion. I have found that too, and many people misconstruing what introversion is. But don't you think also that some of the other, when you think about the types, let's say on Myers-Briggs, also affect how things go? For those of you who might not be familiar, there's like the intuitive versus the sensing and the thinker and feeler and the J and the P. Do you think that affects the introversion view, you know, an introvert? Or what do you think about that? Those other dimensions?
Well, my dissertation was looking at the difference between analytical intelligence and intuitive intelligence. And I looked at differences in cognitive style. Some people tend to make decisions more based on their intuition, whereas others tend to want to deliberate more when making a decision. And I was really interested in the difference between that, or we call it an experiential self versus an analytical self. And so that's a really important dimension of personality. And it can interact with introversion and extroversion, for sure. So you tend to find the stereotype of the sensitive introvert. That's probably the interaction between the intuitive style and an introversion. But you can also have, you know, you can have all sorts of interactions between personality traits.
Yeah.
You can have adventure-seeking introverts. I call them wild introverts. I actually tried to call wild introverts. I'm a wild introvert.
Give me an example of how you're a wild introvert, or what would be an action that you would take?
Wild introversion to me is just a confluence of high openness to experience and high mm-hmm. introversion. It's as simple as that. There's no reason mm-hmm. why you can't score high in both.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a high sensation seeker. I'm a high adventure seeker. I'm a high explorative in my own head of imagination and creativity. You know, my you know, there's a lot of wild stuff going on inside my own head.
But yeah. acting on it, I wonder, how do you think about it more? But like if you're maybe you're going to go do an activity you haven't done before, do you give it do you really spend a lot of time analyzing that, thinking about it? Yeah, we were talking absolutely. About the extrovert being a little more impulsive.
Yeah, absolutely. I put a lot of thought into things and then I just let go and I'm spontaneous after I've put a lot of the thought into it. You know, and a good example of that is someone called Alex Honnold, who really follow his work a lot. He climbs large mountains without a rope. and that might seem like, you know,
wow.
almost mm-hmm. risky. But as he makes clear, I mean, he's put so much thought into right. every single step. And he takes it step by step. And so when he finally does the big climb, it's no big deal, but it looks to the outside observer as though he's this huge risk taker.
Yeah.
But he's actually the least risk taking person you'll ever meet.
Yeah. It's really interesting. We find that with leaders and organizations that they, you know, their folks, their teams will say to them, oh, this is so natural for you. How do you do this? You said you're introverted. And they talk about the amount of preparation they do. To just seem natural, you know, or comedians,
right?
Comedians on stand-up comedians, or people are always surprised. But I'd love you to talk about a little bit about this idea of the pathways in the brain, because that really fascinates me. You know, I've been kind of read a little bit more about dopamine, but you talked about like how there's this like, and that may be what you were referencing, but you know, how understand what's what, help us understand what's going on with that with introverts.
You know, there's no foolproof, you know, like mm-hmm. we haven't figured out all the pathways to the most.
You haven't? Disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, science is a constantly evolving.
Yeah, but this is exciting, though.
I think that when you hear a lot, you'll say, oh, the difference between introverts and extroverts, this is a meme, is they'll say it's where you recharge your battery.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, well, introverts, this is what is propagated over and over again. Well, introverts... Yeah. Need to recharge their battery after an interaction, social interaction, whereas extroverts get energized. But where do you get your energy is what they'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a grain of truth to that scientifically, for sure, that can be explained by dopamine. I think that it takes more... So this gets really technical quick, but I'll try to put this in a language.
Yeah, but you always explain it very clearly. So
okay, I'll try to put this in a language that everyone can understand.
Okay.
An interesting feature of dopamine is that the more sort of dopamine you have coursing through you, the more motivated you are for a particular stimuli and the less work you have to put in to engage with it. So if for introverts who get less intrinsic reward for certain things, like novel social interactions, they have to put in more effort
mm-hmm.
to be motivated to engage in it. And I think that that's what people are picking up on by that meme. That's why I do think there's a large grain of truth to it that can be explained by the way, if you really look at the specific biology of how dopamine works and its correlation with effort and motivation to put an effort into something.
Mm-hmm.
You do see there is a bit of a scientific support to what a lot of introverts feel, but I'm just putting it within a modern day framework of dopamine.
So what's left to learn about that? What would you say the next research questions are? Because you said it's really not, you know, we're still learning about this. What would you like to see more research done on regarding the brain and introversion?
A new frontier of dopamine that excites me is what I call the nerdy dopamine pathway. And I wrote an article about this called the nerdy dopamine pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not all of our intrinsic rewards are through the sex, drugs, and rock and roll route. We evolved this prefrontal cortex that has certain dopamine pathways that no other animals have.
Right.
And that's getting reward value from information. So I think that there's a different individual differences variable there where people can get really energized and want to put effort in when they face the possibility for new information, you know, like to read books, mm-hmm. to watch TV, you know, watch documentaries, to, you know, to just do science, learn new things. That's operating by a different pathway that I think is no less rewarding than our more primal pathways. Now, of course, you can score high in both reward from value, from the primal and the, yeah. the, you know, and the more information one, but they can also come apart. And I think that's really interesting.
They can also come apart. You mean, say more about that.
Well, you can score high in both, low in both, high in one, low in the other. That's all
in the same person. The same right. person. You can have both. So I think you said something about like artists and creatives, uh-huh. Get stimulated by one of those, by one of those. Pathways,
for
right?
sure. The nerdy yeah. pathway. For uh-huh. sure. We have various areas of the prefrontal cortex, this most recently evolved part of our brain that's somehow uh-huh. the seat of consciousness. You have the outside surface, the lateral, and you have the medial inside surface of the prefrontal cortex. Now, the medial, the inside surface is associated with what's called the default mode network, or what I call the imagination network. Mm. And that's where you see a lot of activations when we're trying to imagine a future image of ourselves. And the creativity research by E. Paul Torrance going all the way back to the 60s shows that the greatest creative achievers, the ones who lived a creative lifestyle as adults, were those that were when they were young, they fell in love with a future image of themselves. Hmm. And I think that's a really rewarding dopamine pathway.
And that shaped where they went is in yeah. their lives.
It motivated them to realize who they wanted to be.
Yes.
That's why I'm really into self-actualization. And that's my beat. My beat is self-actualization. Other people have different beats. You know, you have the high performance people, right? That they're obsessed yeah. with high performance. I'm mm-hmm. more interested in peak experience than peak performance, if that makes sense.
Oh, that's definitely should go on a meme. Don't you think?
Thank you. I don't know.
Is that forgive me for not reading the latest one. I'm catching up with all of your books. So, but transcendence sounds like that might have.
Yeah, that's what
you wrote about. Is that the big idea there?
Yeah, transcend is all about what does the science say and how we can really realize our greatest creative potential, but in a way that we transcend ourselves. You know, where what is good for us is automatically good for the environment as well. We have a consideration yes. of the environment around us. There's a great synergy there.
That Ruth sounds Benedict, yeah. Go on.
Ruth Benedict, the just want to give a shout out to Ruth Benedict, the amazing anthropologist who originally. Uh-huh. talked about synergy within the context of anthropology, but Abraham Maslow took it and then started to talk about it as an individual level of analysis of self-actualization.
Mm. Really, really cool. I mean, there's no other words for it, but turning it back to you individually, Scott, do you meditate yourself or do any other kind of have practices that get you into that spiritual or transcendent state?
Oh, yes. Well, meditation... absolutely. But I love bubble baths. Am I allowed to say that?
You just said it. We're not editing it out for sure.
You don't do edits on your podcast?
Well, I guess I can. But I wouldn't edit that out. Bubble baths.
I love putting on like meditation music and having a bubble uh-huh. bath, you know, and just like meditate. No, I love, I love practicing mindfulness in yeah. the context of one-to-one interactions. People really treat mindfulness sometimes like you have to turn on the meditation app in right. order to be mindful. And then when you turn off the app, then you enter the real world. And I think that a mindful way of living is really uh-huh. important.
Yeah.
You don't absolutely. Need the meditation app to have mindful living. You know, I'm trying to be very mindful right now, you know, with
be
you.
In the moment to be with me here.
100%. 100%. And you could practice that muscle with anything you do. When you eat, you can have mindful eating. You know, when you make whatever choice you make, you know, you can really have mindful impulsivity. You know, like I was saying earlier, you can be mindful about things that you want to engage in and You know, like taking a spontaneous road trip. Well, you can be mindful about that, you know, and it seems like a paradox, but I don't think it is.
What would that look like? An impulsive road trip?
You mean a mindful impulsive?
A mindful impulsive, right? You'd have to pack and plan a little, right?
Yeah.
You know, sort of. I have to tell you a funny, quick little funny anecdote. I was with my daughters at a retreat, treating ourselves a few weeks ago, and each week they have a silent dinner because you were talking about eating. And everyone always kids me and my friends say, you know, oh, Jennifer, how could you do the silent dinner? You're so talkative and you're so, but it is the most relaxing, wonderful bit of time for me. And they loved it too. I mean, you basically are just sitting there eating and noticing your food and how it sounds and looks and feels. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, being in the moment. But even extroverts can do that. You know, people that crave stimulation, if you can, as you said, focus your energy into the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we divide up people into different categories, but introverts and extroverts are both human. And
yes, thank you.
Research shows that even extroverts have a certain threshold where they get tired from too much socializing.
Yes.
It's not like, you know, we put this stuff into such black and white terms, like introverts get their energy from this, extroverts get their energy. It's not as black and white as that. The research shows that personality traits are fluid throughout mm-hmm. our day, and mm-hmm. that extroverts just tend to be more extroverted on average throughout their day, but they have lots of moments of introversion. And introverts throughout their day have their extroverted moments. Yes. We're just talking about, if you want to get really technical, the term is density distributions. They differ in their density distributions.
Sounds like a dental term. You sure it's a psychological? Density. Okay. It's like dendrites or something. No?
No, density distributions.
Density distribution. Okay. Yeah. Tell us. Yeah.
Of 1 to 5 scale, you know.
Of
like
how much time?
And to be more, their density distribution tends to be more aligned on average to the 4 and 5 of extroversion, whereas, but they're all over the place in throughout the course of our day. Each of us are human mm-hmm. and humans are not perfectly predictable 24/7, you know?
And it's interesting because part of the reason that I got into this work was because I really felt empathy for introverts who had to flex so much of the day. That ratio was so high that, you know, they had to feel like they could never really be themselves.
Yeah,
that's right. And so that's really what our goal is now, is to say, no, that we don't have to structure all meetings so that you have to talk or even have a meeting, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where you have to be out there. So it's kind of interesting how that's happening.
There is research that I've written about that differentiates happy introverts from unhappy introverts. And the key distinguishing feature tends to be that the happy introverts are more self-accepting of their introversion.
Mm.
And I think that self-acceptance piece is really key to a lot of what you're saying right there.
Yes.
Not shame.
Yes. I would agree from my anecdotal research that is absolutely true. And I think that's why people resonate when they finally learn about this themselves and they can identify and say, you know, nothing, I've been labeled shy my whole life. And, you know, and that really did a number on me. I was never like, you know, Susan writes about and many people report to me that that's the case. What do you think? I've had discussions with Adam about this, but Adam Grant and Dan Pink, who wrote about the ambivert concept a number of years ago when Dan wrote his book, To Sell as Human. And I still wonder about that. I don't know if there's been enough research done. You know, I think he wrote an article called The Ambivert Advantage. Some people who I chat with do identify with that term. And they say, you know, I go back and forth. Others have made the case that, you know, they don't want to, I've had people say to me, those people don't want to accept their introversion. So they're saying they're an ambivert. Do you have any thoughts about that term and the use of it?
I'm not sure scientifically what ambivert means. I mean, it sounds nice and it kind of, a lot of people can like the idea that they don't want to be locked into a certain label. So it's nice. It gives them that freedom. It's like saying, mm-hmm. I'm not binary, you know, like with gender, right? Mm-hmm. I actually think it's a similar thing. It's like a lot of non-binary people are saying, I don't want to be locked into male or female. And I think a lot of people feel like, well, don't put a label on me that I'm introvert or extrovert. I can be both, you know, kind of depending mm-hmm. on the situation. So I don't know. I think that scientifically, though, it's hard for me to wrap my head around what that means, because all we're talking about are density distributions again. We're not talking about you're always one or you're always the other anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not how personality science works. And I try to impress upon people that fact.
I love that. Yeah.
That no matter if you're an introvert, again, we're just saying that your tendencies. your predisposition mm-hmm. is to move in a certain direction throughout the course of your day, but you definitely have the flexibility to act otherwise, to get in other situations. And mm-hmm. And it's not like only the ambiverts have the freedom, you know, and no one else does, you know. So I maybe I'm being too minutiae about it and technical, but it's hard for me scientifically to wrap around what the ambivert it really means scientifically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And usually when I'll delve into it with individuals, they end up saying exactly what you're saying. Yeah, I prefer this, but they don't necessarily know enough. And I guess that's another question I have. How there's a lot of misconceptions about these terms that we're using. What would you hope we could do to kind of move this movement forward so that people understand what these terms are about and what they, you know, it's liberating when you understand it, right? And how we can then, you know, in that will affect cultures. In my case, we're talking about workplace culture, but I think it can go beyond that. So any thoughts on what we can do specifically to keep it moving forward here?
It's a great question. It's a great question.
That's why I have you on, because you got all the answers, Scott. I'm kidding.
Oh, I wish. actually, I don't wish.
That'd yeah, you're very humble. I appreciate that. I appreciate it, as they say in Georgia.
Oh, thank you. well, I appreciate you too. The way I view the situation is I view it within a neurodiversity framework. And that's sort of where I place most things that mm-hmm. have to do with individual differences. We really should appreciate the fact that we're all wired differently from each other in a lot of important ways. We have more in common than we have different. And I also try to impress upon people that fact as well. Mm-hmm. You know, but in the subtle ways in which we do differ from each other, they can have important consequences for how you work, how you perceive the world, how you see others. And I do think there are some neural wiring differences in each of these personality traits that I talked about, that if we are just living in an accepting world where we accept that people differ in these dimensions and we try to accommodate people so they can be their best self, what environments will bring out the best in them, what projects, what are they allowed to have their way of being? You know, I don't think anyone likes feeling as though their way of being is being squelched. And to me, that's all just part of your an appreciation for neurodiversity. It's not, I don't separate the introversion, extroversion thing from other frameworks of autism, schizophrenia spectrum, from the neurotic spectrum, the openness to experience spectrum. I mean, there's all these different spectrums and ways people are wired. And it's just an important dimension within that framework to appreciate.
Yeah. Well, today you've really opened up my eyes in so many ways. It's just the tip of the iceberg. So I know people are going to want to continue the learning from you, Scott, being so educated in so many aspects of this. And also, I have to say, being clear, not all researchers are can relate like human beings. So I do appreciate that. Where can people learn more about you, and where would you direct them so they can continue the learning journey?
Oh, thanks for the opportunity to tell you that. Well, scottberrykaufman.com is my website where I try to have everything on there.
I saw, yeah.
Free tests, self-actualization tests. You can take all sorts of tests that I created. There's a link to the psychology podcast on there, which is the podcast I have, which a lot of your listeners probably would be interested in. And mm-hmm. also the Center for Human Potential. That website is actually centerforhumanpotential.com. And we have courses. I teach the Transcend course, where I teach the latest science of human potential. We help you on your own journey of self-actualization.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And we'll be creating a self-actualization coaching program too. So that's coming up as well.
For coaching, that's also another great resource. Well, it goes on and on. And you're obviously the kind of person that loves to learn yourself and pass.
Oh, I'm a nerdy dopamine pathway up the kazoo.
And where do you come up with these titles? I love them. So my next book, I'm going to come to you for my title because it seems like it comes to you. But so for our listeners out there, you really want to delve into some of the incredible material that Scott provides out there. So it's opened my eyes just even in a few days of diving in. And so I so appreciate you taking the time in your incredibly busy schedule to educate and enlighten us. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for what you're putting into this world. And I wish this podcast all the best. I know it will do really great, you know, because you have a great way of being. So that's what matters first and foremost.
I really do appreciate that. You know, are they allowed to have their way of being? Are they allowed to have their way of being? And that's what we want to take with us. So thank you so much. That wraps up another episode of the Introvert Ally podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you found value from our podcast, we'd love you to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite platform. Also, please do share it with others. Thanks, and I'll see you next time.